If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Bray and Quentin D'Souza.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for joining us again today. Really happy to be back here doing this again. Quentin, we've had a little bit of a hiatus. I'll call it a hiatus. I don't know, really, but it's been a while. So happy to see you again. You look super, man. Oh, how are you doing?
Doing well. We just had a couple of trips. We did the Three Peaks with my two sons in Scotland, England, and Wales. My youngest son, we did about a 10-day trip to Peru. So we did the Salcantay trek and had some fun there. So now I'm back for the summer. And then
for the summer?
Oh, well, maybe.
You're leaving in 2 weeks or something, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm heading to France to climb Mount Blanc. So it's going to be...
This is why we do this, though. Listen to Quentin's message here and listen to his, you know, just do what he's done, then you can do what he's doing now, which is like nothing. He's a work, like no work, just, just hanging out.
Oh, yeah, right.
Trips all the time.
You know, it is a result of working hard. You know, if you're willing to do what people aren't willing to do for like 4 or 5 years, you'll get what they haven't got for the rest of your life. And sometimes people aren't willing to do that. And the trade-off, because there's so many challenges and, you know, and the things like things that are happening right now are pretty crazy. I talked to a developer in my area. He actually works for a very large developer in Ontario. And he basically told me that pre-construction is on fire. And I said, what do you mean on fire? Nobody's buying anything. No, he says, literally, that people are burning down houses so that they don't take possession of them. So in this one development that they have, in the last, because it's there are many phases to the development. So up until last year, they had two fires in the last 10 years in this development. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the last year, they've had five fires. So, and it's after the product is just ready for delivery.
That's climate change.
Yeah. It's more like interest rate change. So they're also getting a lot of these products back. So the developer is like, the people aren't closing on them. Not only are they burning them down so they don't have to take possession, but they're also giving them back. And this particular developer collects a lot up front. So they'll take up, you know, 100,000 to 200,000 up front. For a deposit. So it won't be like a 1% or 2% or 5% deposit. They're taking a 10% or 20% deposit. So that, you know, when you don't close, that's huge. And they are getting back, you know, these properties and keeping the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so, you know, this is a really interesting change that's happening.
Do we have this guy on the show or what?
No, we can't. So no, unfortunately, he works for a very large developer, and he would be in trouble.
You're just saying the way it is. Maybe get his boss on.
Yeah, I could try.
All right, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, this is what's happening. This is today, right? And then pre-construction condos are a nightmare right now. So it's just a lot happening. But everything in general, things are doing well for me. Like I'm working on my refinances. I've got three buildings that I'm refinancing right now. So I just got appraisals back, and we have one phase one that we have to get completed. And then we have phase two, unfortunately, that we have to do on a property. So once that's completed, then we'll be able to proceed with some refinances and pull some capital out and get going again.
So what do you think is your timeline for that? Like, when are you going to
Well, the CMHC just, For on the 23 unit building, CMHC just picked up the app and we just paid the deposit to CMHC. So we're probably about 30 to 60 days out on that. So probably end of September, I'm thinking. Depends on how long that takes them to underwrite it. That one's an MLI select, so it's going to take a little bit longer. The other two, it'll really just depend on BMO, who's doing we're pulling out capital on the existing. And I have one more, which is the phase two. Once we get that done, it's po we can so either we go to CMHC and pull out 250K, or we go back to the original conventional lender and pull out sorry, it would be 450K that we pull out using CMHC, or 300K that we pull out going to the original conventional lender.
Okay.
And so the challenge for us is that if we go to CMHC, we're going to pull out so much capital that if we ever sell the property, we're never going to have enough cap by equity left to pay our tax bills, because we bought the property for like 700,000 and then our new mortgage will be 1.2 million, right? So there's like a trade-off, right? So
Right. But do you have like do you have to go with the appraised or like the cap rate, or can you say we don't want that much? What is it going to take to get all your money back out of that one? Just
So
for example, for
no,
people
we've already
who've
pulled
already
all our, yeah. So this one is like, we're going to pull out another 300K. It's either pull out 300K or 450K. The challenge is like balance, right? Like, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And it will mean that we're not selling that property ever. Like, we're just going to have to kick the can down the road again and again, because we don't really want to pay that tax bill. So there's some balance there. It's also, taking on reasonable debt. Like, you just because you can pull up the mortgage to that level doesn't mean that you should. So there's some we I have to go back and forth with my partner. We gotta kind of discuss it, but it's a good problem to have on this particular property. But it's been a painful process getting there, right? We've had lots of issues with the landlord tenant board, with tenants and all the stuff on the property. And but you fight through it, and if it were easy, everybody would do it, right? But it's not the case. So just keep at it.
Well, speaking of the landlord tenant board, and we're going to talk to our guest, Kayla Andrade, today. And among other things, we're going to talk about the rental housing crisis in Ontario and the broken landlord tenant board system, among a bunch of other things. So, welcome. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Yeah, I know Kyla from way back. Like, she's the founder of the Ontario Landlords Watch, and it's a grassroots advocacy group. And she's come out and spoken to Durham REI, like maybe quite a few times, but like the first time was probably like maybe 15 years ago, something like that. It's quite a while. And you're a landlord yourself, right? You have a portfolio yourself, and I believe you're also are you in the property management business, or you were?
I was for 2 years. Now I just do tenant screening for some landlords that are local. So I just love
Okay.
the screening process of it.
Awesome. Okay, great. Well,
Don't
that's
tell too many
cool.
people I do that
Okay. Okay.
though.
Well,
Why just stop your property management?
I think it was the scaling. We had partners that were like, I never really wanted to get into property management, but my husband and our business partners, they really wanted to get into it. We started it around COVID and we scaled quite big. And then it was like, okay, who wants to do this full time? I'm like, not me. And so I was really dealing with the landlords and dealing with the tenants. And, I talk about tenants all the time and we could have good tenants, bad tenants, but sometimes we have the same thing with landlords. Sometimes landlords are even difficult to deal with. I was obviously the person to talk with them because sometimes when it came down to my business partners, they're like, you talk to them, Kayla, you're good at this. And I'm like, thanks, thanks. I got four kids, I got my own properties, but let's do this, right? So I've been retired at the age of 20. I really don't need to work, but I do love this industry and I love what I do. And this is why I keep bringing all the knowledge that I've been able to accumulate over the years to podcast and to meetings and advocate for this housing industry that I love so much that was, you know, allowing me to retire at the age of 20.
Yeah, you know what? Rob often says that I'm a real pain as an investor. So he probably understands your pain. No, I'm just kidding. I only have his little doll here, but that's it. But
I want that doll.
but seriously, what inspired you to start Ontario Landlords Watch, and how has it evolved?
Yeah, so in Cambridge, the city started to make landlords responsible for their tenants' delinquent utility bills, and that was in 2010. So me just, you know, being a landlord for just so many years, owning this from a semi to a fiveplex, and I get this knock at the door from one of the candidates telling us that, yeah, if your tenants don't pay the water bill, it's going to be put to your property taxes. And I'm like, whoa, hold the phone. Like, we got to figure out what's going on here. How do you fight it? Like, what is the municipality? How can they do this? So we went back and forth with them, back and forth for 4 years. We've had meetings. We had deposits for tenants. They took away the deposit. So a lot of it was going through, okay, well, this is what the municipalities are doing for 4 years. Let's get a petition done for the province, so that way we can get momentum from everyone in all of Ontario to take away that tool that the municipalities can use by making landlords responsible. So that petition was drafted by a lawyer out in Toronto. We went to different landlords associations, getting the support, getting signatures. And of course, you get those signatures, but then what happens at the provincial level? There's now an election. So obviously the petition didn't get to go very far, but to say the least, I'm still fighting the water billing at the city level in Cambridge. We almost have the support. We have a lot of support on the council, but we went to a committee with landlords and homeowners and tenants and city councilors and staff. So they're in the midst of like talking that out right now, and it's almost at the end. So hopefully we can get it back to council before 2026, because there will be a municipal election in which hopefully I still have that support to get landlords off the hook, because the landlords, the homeowners and the tenants agree that landlords should not be responsible for tenants' delinquent bills. So we got everybody together just on that fight, because it came back with like, hey, can you help us fight the Residential and Tenancy Act and the Landlord and Tenant Board? And I was like, okay, we got a bigger problem here than just water billing. So I brought everybody into a Facebook group on Facebook, and obviously expanded different platforms. So that way we can keep everybody informed of what's happening, not just about water billing, but the RTA, LTB, rent eviction licensing. You name it, you name it. There's so much that we're under attack with. So I created that platform to make sure that we're all in the know, and we're when the call to action happens, I want to make sure that we have the support that we need to make our voices heard.
Yeah. Do you know much about there was a new, renovation licensing in Toronto, correct?
Oh, yeah. You know what? And just like any other city that's implementing this, this is a cash grab. Trying to say that you're implementing a rent eviction bylaw, charging homeowners $700 and going through the process to verify that the tenants do need to be vacant, that the tenants do need to vacate in order to do the renovations. This is about putting money into the coffers of the city of Toronto, which obviously is in desperate need of money all the time. So we have to say that no matter what way you do it, the landlords are going to pay it. They're going to show you guarantee, but if they give it back to the tenant, that's the other question. Who is enforcing it? And really, our real question is, how can the city of Toronto create such a bylaw that is, it contradicts what the province is doing? Because the province runs everything. It's not the city's jurisdiction to be handling rent eviction bylaws when there's already a process in place underneath the N13 and the Landlord and Tenant Board overseeing it, where every tenant has that option to fight this at the Landlord and Tenant Board. And if the landlord does not allow them to move back in at the same rate, again, it's at the Landlord and Tenant Board. So we're really seeing a lot of push. And because if you look at what Toronto is, Toronto in itself is very heavy tenant. You know, this is about our politicians doing smoke and mirrors, really trying to benefit themselves by looking like they're trying to benefit the tenants. And in reality, we're going to see investors stay away from Toronto, and we're going to see more slum conditions because we're going to wait until the city comes to give you an order so you don't have to go through that process of getting a $700 fee and going through the red tape. So this is just going to
sound lovely.
Yeah, it's
what a dream.
You gotta love these politicians who think they know it all.
Yeah, you know what?
How does something like that get passed? Really, how does something like that get passed when, like you say, it's redundant? It's not something that the city is actually responsible for looking after. So how does it happen?
It happens because you have city councilors who are in wards where they're heavily tenanted. And then they're also elected officials who are very involved with different community groups and community groups of all different types who do support the prevention of a homeowner being able to evict you for renovations. Because everyone thinks it's happening very frequently, but in reality, it's not. But they want it to make it look like the city's doing something in order to attack the housing crisis that they see in the city. So it's just about how many, that's why if you can say like your vote counts when it comes down to municipal elections, it certainly does. And we always encourage our investors and our property managers and our realtors, everyone, to support candidates who have an investor mindset, instead of just making it look like the city's going to be the knight in shining armor being able to do all this themselves, because they're really not. So we're really just hoping that if you have a politician or a candidate that's going to be coming in this 2026 election, support them, knock on doors with them, donate to their campaigns. I've heard it from Irwin. Everyone knows Irwin Sito. So he said, you got to pay to play. And it's true. You do have to pay. You got to volunteer. You have to donate to these people's campaigns. And hopefully one day through Ontario Landlords Watch, we can start donating to some of these parties and the candidates as well, just so that we can have an impact when it comes down to advocacy. Because I'm telling you, it's not just the politicians, but it's these community groups that do weigh heavily on these elected officials' decisions.
Very interesting. Sorry I cut you off, Quentin. I didn't mean to do that before.
That's fine. It's just something that keeps happening, and I see it again and again, even with licensing. So rental licensing is another example of what you just said about the rent eviction law, where it's a duplication of service, not only a duplication of service at the provincial level, because the province also identifies, you know, issues with particular properties and has a process for the tenant to complain about it. And then the Residential Tenancies Act has a system to deal with it. But we also have on the municipal level bylaw, and bylaw, you know, handles any sort of claims that tenants might have on the condition of a property. But on top of that, you have municipal governments who institute rental licensing, who are triplicating a service that's duplicating, instead of, you know, just letting the existing powers do what they're doing. And, you know, from a statistical perspective, when you look at the residential tenancies or the different bodies that have jurisdiction over different areas, and you look at the statistics that they provide, you can actually see how many cases are related to non-payment of rent, how many cases are related to rent evictions, how many cases are related to actual condition of property. And if you really looked at it, you could say, wow, none of this actually makes sense to be spending any time on, you know, licensing and rent evictions. Actually, if you wanted to solve the problem, you should probably just focus on non-payment of rent. If you just did that, you would remove all the backlog, and you can actually handle everything else quickly, because there wouldn't be no backlog. It would be like, you know, if you did it like similar to what you do in Florida, you know, when you have somebody that doesn't pay, usually they're out by the end of the month. Because it's based on whether they paid or not. You go to a judge. The judge issues a writ of execution or order of execution, whatever it is, and then you take it to a sheriff and then they enforce it. That's it.
Oh yeah. And the non-payment of rent application is the number one application in all of the applications at the Landlord and Tenant Board. The landlords are filing over 80,000 applications and the tenants are just over 6,000 applications. So you can tell where the Landlord and Tenant Board lies, right? And who is actually funding it. And unfortunately, the landlords were funding that at $186 a pop for every application to the Landlord and Tenant Board. It's a money-making machine. That's why we want to encourage our elected officials to remove non-payment of rent applications from being heard by an adjudicator. This is a bill. We have a portal. Can you show proof that you made your payment or at least put a payment plan in place? No? Okay, here's your standard order. This is what you're gonna get. There is, and let me get this straight. Like, we are not being like we want people out on the streets. We do have local service managers in Ontario. There is rent relief programs out there for tenants who qualify. Right. So if anyone is in a hardship situation, the money is there to help them. We do not need to be backlogging the Landlord and Tenant Board with non-payment of rent applications or even personal use applications when we have tenants who are even going through, going and moving into a property where it's cockroach infested or their landlord is coming into their unit unannounced. Like the system is also failing the tenants. And we have landlords who are dealing with tenants who are threatening them and like harm to them and their family. And they can't get in front of an adjudicator because we're backlogged it for non-payment of rent.
Yeah, totally. I totally get what you're saying.
I get
So,
so passionate.
well,
How do we
I
get
got.
you in there? How do we get you in the LTV? Come on.
Oh my goodness, I would be the Judge Judy of the LTB, and they know it. That's why they will never reply me for an int. They won't even give me an interview. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, you know what? But what we need is a change of the process and system, which would be a change to the Residential Tenancies Act. Like, even if you were to be an adjudicator, you'd still have to follow the
Right.
process, and it's a
Yeah.
process that needs to change, not just the. It's not the. I think the adjudicators are doing the job that they are told to do, and it's not necessarily their fault. It's just they're following the process. The system itself is broken, and you know, if there is a change that needs to happen, it needs to happen in the process when you have a bureaucratic system. And I'm sure this isn't the only challenge, but what are some of the biggest challenges that landlords face in Ontario right now?
I think what really a lot of people are slowly finding out is the was it Bill 10? I don't know. I'm still on like summer mode with four kids. So they're making it's Bill 10. The landlords are going to be held responsible for criminal activity. Yay! So that
Yeah.
was fun. So if anyone doesn't know, so this is more of the fact that you have a tenant inside of your property and there's a lot of questions about what is reasonable knowledge of the criminal activity that your tenant is doing. But technically, you could be held responsible. You could have fines. The city can come in and they can actually take away your property. So this is now not just for the landlords, but it's also the property managers who are managing this property and making sure that, you're doing your due diligence and making sure that you're screening the tenants properly, but making sure that you're also doing inspections and trying to be very thorough on that infection in inspection because deep down we have to give the tenants 24-hour written notice and they know you're coming. So what they can hide within that time frame and talking to other people in the industry, they're like, hey, you can hide an elephant in that time frame. Like what and again, what is that reasonable? What is the criminal activity? Is it just drugs? Is it sex trafficking? Is it, they are it's a chop shop? Like what is happening that would consider that to be criminal activity? And then what are you going to do for the landlords? Are you going to allow them to come to the Landlord and Tenant Board in a timely manner, like in within 2 weeks? Or are we still waiting that 4 month
Right.
time frame in order to seek justice to evict tenants? And are we going to be able to do it done quicker? But again, this is government making the homeowners police officers now. We're already social workers. Now we're becoming police officers. So I think we might have to do another show there about getting a police officer on for like tactical training. But we keep telling our community is that this puts landlords in harm's way. You know, if you are dealing with criminals and, you know, we don't want criminals on our property. But at the same time, if we do find out about that and we're now Big Brother ratting on them, my address is on that standard lease. My children are at the standard on the standard lease, you know, where my location is. So how are they, why are they continue to keep passing their responsibilities on to a private citizen?
Yeah, I've seen this so many, you know what, in my, even my own personal experience, because, you know, we've got like 580 units in Ontario. And my own personal experience here is the police want nothing to do with it. And especially if they are drug users, they want nothing to do with it. What they want is to find the kingpin or the main drug person, not the people that are, you know, the small time dealers and things like that. They don't want to deal with it. And even when you present them with the opportunity, hey, look, I don't know if any other landlords have had this experience. I know that my personal experience is that I've said, hey, look, we have somebody who is dealing drugs and we need help. And they won't do anything to help you.
A firefighter for 5 years trying to kick out somebody for 5 years. They have everyone and their mother going in and out of this one bedroom unit. What the best of this is that this tenant is being protected by the community legal services. So the taxpayers are paying for this representative, this tenant to have legal representation in order to stay in this unit and continue to bring down that community, to continue to keep having people access to drugs. It's sickening. It's sickening.
Yeah, absolutely. We recently had a second stay on an eviction where the person owes us $12,000. Second stay of eviction. So like, and it's through the Kingston Community Legal Clinic. And they know that she can't pay, and there's no way that she can pay. But yet a provincially funded legal service is basically going to push this off for another 6 months just so that person can stay in the unit, not because they can pay, right? And they know that the person can't pay because they can't find her a place because... For whatever reason, she's probably got to the point where it's going to be very difficult for, they would have to put her in some sort of public housing or social housing. And even then, she would probably have an issue. But it's somebody else's problem right now.
Well, the shelters, so emergency shelters, my local area in the region of Waterloo had stated that it costs approximately $3,000 a month to house one person in a motel. So considering that, then you work yourself into social housing, which there's a 10 plus year waiting list for that. But that's why our government is looking at, hey, what can our nonprofit housing providers do? And if you talk to some of these nonprofit housing providers, they have 41 units being managed between 16 to 19 people managing this, you know, supportive housing unit. And it's like, that is a lot. That extent, like, you may not be making a profit, but how much are these people making for a salary? And this is where we get our head thinking, like, what nonprofit organizations, the ones who always have the ear to our elected officials, like, what do they have that, like, we're not asking the government or the taxpayers to build our properties, to maintain our properties, or to manage our properties. We're just asking them to almost subsidize the people that you want us to put in there if they don't pay us, right? So it comes down to, like, what is the better way of getting the supply to the market? Is it going to be through the private sector, or is it going to be through the nonprofit sector? But with the chokeholds that every level of government is doing right now, it seems like they're trying to choke out the private investors, and we're coming back fighting because we're not going down without a fight.
So, love it. Speaking of this tenant in particular, Quentin, no, we must be able to do something about our screening process to help us not deal with that in the future. So what would you say are some of the best ways that we can screen tenants so we don't run into these issues.
That's a really good point. And I can't wait to hear Kyla, but in our situation, it was that we assumed that tenant in that apartment building. So we didn't have a choice, but I'm really interested to hear how Kyla responds. Cause that's
what are some of the things that we can do so that we don't run into that.
As soon as I heard him talk, I'm like, it's inherited. Inherit it. You know, this is where you got a deal coming to you guys. The chances
Quentin can pass off the blame, he will.
There is a lot of people, like when you start to see there's a good deal and you start to get to know like the tenants in there, you know why they're selling, right? And then that's where a lot of landlords are like, okay, I'm stuck with a broken system. I can't get them out. Like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to sell it, right? But when you are dealing with an inherited type of tenant and they are not paying their rent, the best thing that our landlords can do is a report that tenant to front lobby. This is where that data is going to be shared with Equifax and Landlord Credit Bureau. It's going to the tenant's credit history and inform all of our landlords to do the credit check themselves. Never accept a credit check from a tenant. Never accept it when it's like, oh, I'm just checking this out for my daughter. She's coming in. No, like you need to be meeting the person that you're going to be wanting to live in your rental unit. And we have to make sure that our landlords are not only doing it for like the reporting of the debt, but telling the good tenants that you can help them grow their credit. So you're going to attract some good tenants to you. But a lot of people have to consider too that the employment information that's coming from tenants too, it's becoming fraudulent. You know, this is Photoshop stuff. This is they have people pretending to be the companies. They're creating websites to make it look like they're working for that company. So a lot of it has to come down to your gut feelings as well when you're dealing with the people. Like I tell them all the time, like I smell people when they walk past me. They're like, you smell them? I'm like, well, not like really smell them, but like I'm like, I want to know like how are you, like, do you smell clean? Did you like just smoke a joint before you like left the place? Like you really have to get deep into making sure that they are the type of person that A, you can deal with if situations do go arise and there's some issues. Like they're going to be decent people, but getting that debt add it to their credit history is going to be more important than posting it to Facebook or posting it to this site or that site. This is showing the tenant that there's a consequence for their actions and that they know that there's a reward for their actions as well. So I definitely make sure you're getting the credit checks done from front lobby as well in order to make sure that you're avoiding all these people. And when you are getting like a situation like Quentin, when you've got it inherited, like everything's got to be document, document, document. Show that you're trying to work with the tenant, try to provide different resources to that tenant who didn't pay their rent on time with, you know, rent relief programs, have a documentation of that and making sure all your paperwork is done right. Even though you don't have an issue right now with a non-paying tenant, I want you to learn what it's like to deal with a non-paying tenant in Ontario. Go to the RTA, look at the form, fill it out, you know, pass it over to your buddy who knows what he's doing and say, did I do it right? Is there something that I did wrong? Like test each other because you are spending more time trying to learn the rules and it's too much stress on someone when they're already dealing with the problem. So be proactive and get yourself taught up on it. And there's lots more for the tenant screening, but I don't know how much time I have today for
it. Well, I didn't want to just breeze over it. Can you tell everyone that's listening a little bit about front lobby? Like, what is that?
So front lobby, frontlobby.com. So landlords and property managers, you can report unpaid rent and unpaid utilities to the credit bureaus through front lobby. You do not need the tenant's consent to report a debt, and you do not need a landlord and tenant board order. It gets shared to Equifax and Landlord Credit Bureau in the middle of the month for the previous month. Tenants are notified that this debt has been reported. Tenants can log in to verify what was reported to front lobby. And they also get rent reminder emails through the platform. So if they are going to be paying their rent on the first, it gets a little notification, say, hey, you know, rent's coming due. If they don't pay the rent and you update the system to say that they didn't pay rent, then it's going to give them a notification to say you've been reported late. This is how it's going to impact your credit. You know, that way it kind of shows A, you're professional, B, it's letting the tenants know that they do have consequence for not paying their rent. Or, hey, you can also tell your new tenants, put it right on your ad that you helped them build their credit by renting off of you. Especially with this type of economy and the way that the rental properties are, you want to, instead of doing 1 month's rent free or cables included, offer them to help them build their credit by being able to make their payments on time, because that will impact their credit score and help them become homeowners or maybe landlords one day themselves. So definitely game changer for the industry. And again, our landlords are getting long form Equifax credit reports for $10.99 as a premium member with Front Lobby. So that's going to be something where you know, it's a write off. It's write off for your business. Make sure you're doing it yourself and never accept anything from a tenant, because I can tell you right now, when the landlords call me when things have gone sour, they have accepted a credit check from the tenant themselves.
And what are you looking for when you're looking at a credit report? Because a lot of people, although they can get a credit report, they don't know necessarily how to read it. Like, from a high level, what is it that you're looking for?
I'm going to look at, from the application that you're giving them, and you're going to have that address or the current address, their previous address. I want to see, is that lining up to what their credit report is going to say based on their addresses. I'm also going to look at their employment. When they say that their employment, they said that they're working there for this long, is it showing up on their credit report as well? Then you're going into the trade lines. A lot of people just look at the score. Oh, it's good or it's fair. I like anything over 650. 650 is my little niche. I don't like touching anything less. And this is just a part that I had one tenant go bad in 23 years. So I'm going to stay with that little thing that I've done. And then you're going to be looking at the trade lines to see what type of available debt is available to the tenants. Are they making their payments on time? Is there anything in collections? Even if it's something small, like, you want to know about that. Some tenants are very upcoming when you know that you're going to do a credit check. They'll tell you, hey, my score is not that great. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, I'm still going to pull it, right? And I'm just going to see what kind of available debts on there. And if you have like easy home and you're not paying your Rogers bill, and you know, you have a debt that's now been written off because you didn't pay it, you know, these are telltale signs that the tenant is not responsible enough to give them the keys to the very expensive unit. You know, this is I'm not a charity. I am a business, and the banks don't lend me money unless I have a job and can back myself on the income. So I expect that from our tenants as well.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of touched on it, but what are some of the other changes that you think we need to see in our housing policies?
Oh, good golly. Everything.
wait. You got to start bigger and then work down, because there's changes that we can see from a federal perspective, provincial, and then municipal.
So maybe let's just also start be realistic too, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, like, what are some realistic changes that we can, well, I mean, these are two different questions. One yeah. is, what should we be doing? And the other one is, what can we actually do? Right. So I guess let's tackle both those. Let's start with the first one. What should they be doing?
I think we need to reflect and look at our leaders. I think we need to look at our elected officials. And I think if you look at how many times we've had a new minister of housing or associate to the minister of housing, what I really haven't seen changed is the attorney general, Doug Downey. So I created a petition calling for the resignation of Doug Downey. I think that we do need a fresh face. We need a different mindset to create the solution, because how do we create a solution with the same mindset that created the problem, right? So I do want to see a change in that leadership, so that we don't have someone who is just looking at making the landlord and tenant board bigger and having more adjudicators at $110,000 salaries to handle cases with just because people can't pay their rent on time. And that's where I see this big magnitude of government jobs and people being able to say, oh, I got to vote for this party because they keep me employed. So again, I would like to kind of see that leadership change, and obviously have somebody that's in that Minister of Housing role that does benefit, you know, all parties involved, the nonprofits, the housing, the private sector. Because as of right now, from what I'm seeing on his post, is that he's very... he's very into the nonprofit sector, which is very concerning because, again, like we cannot afford as taxpayers to keep building, managing, maintaining, and subsidizing government housing. So we do need different solutions. The other aspect of change is that we need to remove the non-payment of rent from the landlord and tenant board. That needs to be a full-on reform of how we handle non-payment of rents in Ontario. We have to put severe consequences that are in place for that, as well as personal use applications for landlords trying to exit the system and get out of the industry. It shouldn't be this hard for them to want to get out and take it over for their own personal use or sell it. And there is a process in place for tenants who are, you know, going to fall victim to, you know, bad faith evictions. You know, they can go back to the landlord tenant board, and the landlords can definitely get fined very heavily for doing a bad faith eviction. So why are they, you know, resulting in a full on hearing for personal use? And then, you know, it's we have about 20 different issues, but it's government. So we have to put it down to three. So my third one would be the rent control within our province. 2.1 is now going to be the 2026 rent control. And meanwhile, we were like not even happy with the 2.5 cap that they had. Now they brought it down to 2.1. But hey, municipalities and are still increasing the property taxes. Our utilities are continuing to increase. Our insurance is continuing to go up. So they've literally made the private housing providers as a social agency for the government with no compensation. So this is where we have to step into the lines of, you're putting a lot of rules and regulations in for our landlords. You're telling us what we can raise our rents. You're not, this is the highly most regulated industry that I can think of and controlled by government. And look at the mess that we're in right now. So I think it's just, let's don't give them too much to work with, because we never know who's going to listen to this. But don't give them too many things, because when all levels of government are doing something, it's like too many cooks in the kitchen and everything is getting burnt, right? So we have the province doing their thing. Now the municipalities are doing short-term rental bans. They're doing landlord licensing. They're doing rent eviction bylaws. They're doing the water billing. It's nonstop between what the municipalities are trying to do to really impact the slowdown of bringing that supply that is needed across Ontario and really across Canada.
Yeah, they're treating the symptom instead of focusing on what would actually solve the problem. They're looking at the, like, what is the symptoms, and they're just trying to treat a symptom, right? It's kind of like you may feel better for doing it, but you're never going to solve the actual cause of the problem. Right, the supply problem. So,
they don't want to impact them. It's a vote. It's a game. It's we got to tell them to stop playing politics in the housing industry, and that's what has been happening.
I'm way too pessimistic to think that a change in government will do something about that. But you know, I guess we can wish and hope.
You know what's funny, Kyla, you just made a connection that I didn't have before, and it's kind of interesting because Doug Downey is a member of parliament in Barrie, and Barrie has this huge affordable housing project, and it's called the Rose Street Project, and they're building 215 units, and it's I think 80% affordable housing. Guess how much it costs per unit to build? Come on, guess.
Probably triple.
You know, like, guess, like, in the millions. So, like,
you've already given her way too many clues. So 215.
215 units. Yeah. I don't know. I've been diving deep into my 40 units of housing. I don't know, Quentin. You got to get me.
So let's say you have 40 units, and we'll just say that they're like $500,000 a unit, like brand, I don't know. Like, so what it, like, to actually build a unit, maybe you're talking like $300 to $400 a square foot. And if you have like 500 square foot units, that's, let's say 400 times 500. What is that? Oh man, I got to do math quickly. 400 times 500.
Don't even ask me. I'm on espresso.
So we're talking about $200,000 a square per unit, okay? Yeah. So right now, It's $217 million to build 215 units. That was what the estimated budget is. I have a couple, this is where people I know, I can't really say who they are telling me that this project is actually closer to $500 million, and it's just they're not announcing it, and they're not talking about it. So this is speculation. I can't tell you who my sources are, and it's possible that that's going to be even more. Doug
Are
Downing
these
is
single
the
family
Attorney
homes?
General, and he's the member of Parliament for and that and if he's connected with these affordable housing projects, it's quite interesting that this is happening, and the amount of money that's being spent is in his area. I just gotta say.
I'm telling you got to go down the rabbit holes for some of these things. Like, and if you want to talk about CMHC, just looking at the nonprofit housing developers building their relationship with CMHC. CMHC is being like the biggest landlord now, but when they come down to getting the approvals for some of nonprofit organizations, they have a certain stipulation from CMHC of who they're allowed to rent to. Is it going to be the mom and dad and the small kids that are just looking for a little bit of a boost? No, there's definitely demographics of communities that are being pushed into these new units. They're not available for everybody. So we're going down that rabbit hole right now. I don't have too
Oh.
much into it, but I don't, and I know one of our elected officials at the federal level were calling upon CMHC to come into committee and question what they are doing because what their mandate was. And I believe the government's trying to create something else as well as CMHC. So we have to even look at CMHC and are they good guys or are they bad guys? For my opinion on them right now, I think they need a deep audit. If
It's quite interesting
I
because
ever go missing, guys, please check the water treatment
oh no, I'm telling you, me, and there's a few other people that I know, we're probably all in the same boat. So just you'll have to find us. Maybe they'll be in like some concrete shoes somewhere, but
You
like
know,
I'm
I'm usually at Starbucks. They're gonna find me really easy.
a
On a slightly different note, but sort of on the same tune, is I just saw a news story yesterday where it was saying that there's no available hotels in Niagara Falls right now when people are there visiting because they are all rented out to immigrants.
And
Yeah.
you had that with
Over
the asylum seekers.
2,000 hotels, rooms.
So
Yeah.
go down into the recent news. They talked about the asylum seekers, where Doug Ford said he's going to bypass the federal government. He's going to give them all work permits, even though my 16-year-old is struggling to find his summer job. And then all of a sudden, like that went viral, and now he backtracked. But now they're going to take them from the hotels and they're going to start putting them into permanent residency. Meanwhile, we already have a 10 plus year in Waterloo, 22 years in Mississauga. Like, what long-term housing are we going to be putting these asylum seekers in and not even validating if they really are indeed under protected underneath a seeking asylum? Like, I don't even know any more of how government can see this go. And it's not just housing, guys. Like, this is your hospitals, this is your jobs, this is everything that is being broken because of the mass influx of immigration that we've had in the country in the last couple of years. But too many people are afraid to talk about it. But I like to see that we do have elected officials now talking about that big elephant in the room, because that's what did us over for many of the services that we're feeling squeezed on right now, and definitely our healthcare system.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, it was like $200 per night for an ex asylum seeker to be housed. So, we're talking 200, let's say 30 days. That's, $6,000 a month per asylum seeker, in a hotel room. That's quite a bit of funds and that are going towards this. And then you look at it based on the number of asylum seekers in Canada, that's huge. That is a huge
It
number.
is huge. It's something that needs to be. I don't see mainstream media talking about it as much as they should be. Like, this is our taxpayer dollars. Like, we've already been taxed to the point where people are leaving Canada. They're leaving Canada and in droves. And so when you see our Canadian citizens born and raised here, and they're all over the place saying this is not the Canada that they were raised in, and they can't even survive anymore. And this is why, like, I think you have to start helping your own country before we can help other people at this point.
I
But
agree.
hey, that's just my
Totally.
personal opinion. I just,
Yeah.
it's sad to see, like, the entire world is on chaos. But again, like, we have to stop praying into these elected games and, you know, Carney and Trump, and, you know, they thought he was going to be the best negotiator, and now we got tariffs at 35%. Meanwhile, other countries were able to negotiate 15% tariffs. So, you know, obviously we picked the wrong leader, in my opinion. But hey, we got to deal with the cards until there's a no confidence vote. And we would hope that our people listening would talk to their MPPs and try to get that movement started. If not, there's another convoy on September 15th.
Is there? Yeah, and then the craziness with all of that, like, and the undemocratic nature of freezing people's bank accounts because you don't agree with them, is just totally wrong. Like, I can understand where a government not agreeing with a particular person's point of view or a group's point of view, but that's the whole point of democracy, is to be able to legally and ethically share. And if you can't, you, just because your neighbors are complaining that the horns are too loud, doesn't give you the right to freeze people's bank accounts. Like, just some of the stuff that has been going on in our country is ridiculous. I came here when I was 4 years old. I'm a first, generation Canadian. I love my country. I've only known it. This is a place that I've loved, but it's changed in the last 10 years. And I'm really hoping to see a change in the a different direction. And the point of having democracy is being able to disagree with your government and not be thrown in jail. That's the difference between China in Canada, right?
It's a canceled culture that we have. People are afraid to speak up. They're afraid to speak up. They're afraid to say what needs to be said. And the thing is, like, we're losing our own Canadian values, and we're losing that on many different fronts, even down to the housing, where it's like, you know, the government is really trying to peg the tenants and the landlords against each other. Meanwhile, they have to do that because in reality, the good landlords and the good tenants can come up against the government and be like, what are you doing here? Like, you shouldn't be making it this complicated. But it is these societies of people who are just feeling almost that entitlement. And then we have people also coming over here who are wanting to bring their values to their people here. But no matter which way it is, you know, people do need to speak up about it, and they need to get on whatever challenge and do it respectfully. You know, some people do it very hostile, and then you get the police at your door. But there, I think a lot of people are watching that trial now with Tamara and Chris, and trying to figure out, like, what they're going to try to use them as an example so that it doesn't happen again. And that's what's really sad, right? To see that, you know, that I can tell you right now, I know we're getting off a little bit off the real estate topic, but that did give me hope through this COVID lockdown, because I was not, you know, taking a trial vaccine. And when I seen those trucks and the stories and the people gathering and standing on the side of the road in the middle of like freezing weather with my children holding that Canadian flag, I've never felt so more Canadian than in my entire life, because of what that had happened. So I want to give them a shout out for them to done what they done, and hopefully everyone has their backs, because you know what, it's at least what they've done for us, because look at what we're dealing with now.
Yeah, and I just want to say that I never, like, I wasn't the person that disagreed with the vaccine. I was okay to do the vaccine. I was okay to do that, and I still think it's wrong for what was done to them. As a Canadian, it was an embarrassment, and it's not how we do things in Canada. We're supposed to be a democracy, and if it's okay for me to take it, but why would you force somebody else to do something that they don't want to do because you think it's the right thing to do? That's what happens when governments take on too much control. And that's what happens in previous like world wars. That's why we've had this, because governments tells people that this is how you're supposed to do things, whether it's, you know, a World War One, World War Two, any of the wars. It's governments that tell people this is what you're supposed to do and you're going to do it. Otherwise, we're going to do this to you. And that's, and unfortunately, that's just not, that's not how you deal with it, in a democracy. And it's, granted, it's easier to say, you know, looking at history and then coming back to it today, it's easy to be critical. But at the same time, you know, when I was seeing what was happening to people who disagreed with my point of view, but they were being like
nasty
thrown in
it.
Jail, like, come on, and you donate to somebody who does it and you get all your bank accounts like frozen. Who does that? Like,
it's
this
almost,
is
what
like
really
a totalitarian
got me.
Look
at Trudeau when he's like, you're not gonna, it's his tone, his hands, and he's like, you won't be able to ride on a train, on a plane, like you can't go out for dinner, like rat on your neighbors, like whoa, like
oh,
where did
yeah.
we go here? Like, we understood that it was like we had COVID, like I was down half a day, I was upset, I was like, I thought we could have like some time where I know, but now I'm also seeing family members who passed away because they took the vaccine, right? So we're still up in the air, you know, what was happening. The doctors are saying it, but they're silenced. You know, there's a lot of things that have changed in Canada, and it's not done. I think there is, I think it's going to get a lot worse, unfortunately.
You know, I was always concerned for my in-laws because they're older, and I thought for sure they should have been protected, like because they were more higher risk than everybody else, but not necessarily everybody else. But again, that's in hindsight. It's easier to say now, but it's hard to say. You know, Rob, you know we're gonna get banned now from like all the platforms. We're gonna get deplatformed. We're gonna be screwed. It'll be just like me, you, and Kyla, who's going to be listening to this podcast.
Hey, look,
and that's
we
it.
Just got to do. We just got to say one thing to stop from getting canceled. Elbows up.
Get vaccinated.
No! Don't say. Please.
No. We're
yeah,
joking, guys.
Elbows
we're
up
joking.
And knees down, right?
But guys, look what's happening with that Christian singer coming over
coast
to coast. You know, like same thing. And what his model and what he's been preaching and worshiping, where people like no one's free to say things. And this is why, like, even for the housing, it's still the same thing. So many people want us to tell
their
story.
That's insane. If no one, concerts like what he's doing happen every single day. Other, like, it's, you know, go do some research, people. He's not the only one putting on a concert in a church.
No.
What is going on?
There's another religion doing the same thing, but no one is not in the news. It's not coming to the cities. They're not canceling their permits,
it's
right?
It's mind-blowing. That right there. That deserves zero attention from anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to go to the concert, go. Like,
and there was a smoke bomb
that.
Thrown into the church. Like, and the guy's like, I've been in Turkey. He's been all over the world doing these. And he's never felt so threatened by the people here in Canada. I'm like, Canada have been known for the nicest people in the world. Like, where did you go wrong here? I'm just going to keep spreading the love, keep spreading the message out there about what our goals and our traditions should be. And keep
Yikes.
That culture back as much as we possibly can. But I know that I love every part of being about Canadian, except my government embarrasses me.
Okay, we got to get back on track.
Back on track.
Okay, so how can investors advocate for their rights while still being responsible housing providers?
One, join Ontario Landlords Watch members group on Facebook. Follow me on LinkedIn, on TikTok. I'm everywhere, even on X. We have our new thing on X. And get yourself a part of a community. First and foremost, you need to be able to know what's happening, when it's happening. Number two, I need you to follow all of your social media accounts, all of the elected officials at municipal, provincial, federal. You need the Minister of Housing, the Attorney General, the Associate to the Attorney General. general. Get yourself involved in as many committees. Google like what kind of housing committees or community committees you can sit on, either at a municipal level or at a provincial level. I sit on two different committees in the city of Cambridge. I don't know for how long because the election's coming and I got to watch what I say if I'm sitting on a committee.
You've done that today for sure.
I'm gone. Kayla's canceled today. Cancel culture.
We're all canceled together, so it's okay.
You know what? I'm going to wear it with pride, I tell you. As long as I don't go into Facebook jail, and if I do, you got to go over onto X or LinkedIn. But
and we have all of the links for all of that stuff, and it'll be in the show notes.
Is awesome. Yeah. So we got to get ourselves into like getting yourself very involved. A lot of people, like when you talk about housing, I've made posts, my recommendations. So scroll right through different posts that I've made in the group and on my public page, talking about what I see needing to be changed and why. And share that with your following, share that with your friends. If you have a podcast or you have a meeting group with landlords, invite me. I want to come. I want to tell them what I've been doing, how I do it, why I'm doing it. And hopefully I can encourage more advocates to be like me. I'm not going to be able to do it myself. I've been doing this for 15 years. I've created some advocates on the way, which is great. We need more of them. We need more voices, more people that are speaking the lingo and being able to go down that rabbit hole and highlight what needs to be highlighted, because this is not greedy landlords. This is not the private sector is there to make people homeless. We're not here to, you know, jack the rents up so high that people can't afford to live. It's the fact that our government has done this. And this is just a symptom of your government mismanaging this housing crisis. So get yourself heavily involved as much as you possibly can. Tune into different podcasts like this one, share this one with all of your following. I know I will be. And we have to be speaking up against our government, because we should be knowing more about them than them knowing about us, in my opinion. So let's do our part and connect with one another, and do that by sharing this podcast.
Awesome. And and you have also a consulting business, is that correct?
Yeah, so I did a little, like I had to divide between advocating and then the consulting, because I mixed them all together. So I'm helping landlords deal with, you know, helping them do the tenant screening, or if they have a difficult tenant or almost have a difficult tenant, I guide them through the process of what we need to do to make sure that we stay professional and protect them so they don't do anything that's going to bite them in the butt. Or if they're kind of stagnant and they're waiting on an order with the landlord and tenant board, I give them some strategies of what we can do to get that hearing or done a little bit quicker and or get their order. So different things that I've learned throughout the years, and with my connection to my network, I try to do whatever I can to help them pull that emotion out of their problem and let's get right down to the pen and paper and start writing to our elected officials and get things done. So that's what I did on the, so I do that a little bit. Like I haven't really told a lot of people about it because I love the advocacy more, but there is got to be a fine line between consulting.
Okay. Awesome. And it's just called Kayla Consulting?
Kayla Strategies and Consulting.
Okay. Perfect. We've got the link for that too.
I had so many names for it, but everyone's like, everyone knows you as Kayla. You know, people I know, Kayla from Ontario. I'm like, okay, it's Kayla. Well, kind of like, hello?
That's perfect.
Don't look like her though.
I think we should have you back on way more often. This is the first time we've had you on. I think you should be on much more often.
Aww,
it was definitely more exciting, and you're much better to look at than Rob, I gotta say. So
hey, I want that head. I want that bobblehead. Like, what are we gonna get? They're gonna be available on the Ontario Landlords Watch .com.
We should put those on like a swag, like a little shop on our website or something.
Yeah, like people send me the shirts, and I like showing my shirts off when I get on different podcasts, because like it is about connecting us all together, not just landlords and property managers, but it's also companies, right? So I have we started doing sponsorships just so that I have like the tools that I need, from like StreamYard to going to events and things like that. So we do have our sponsors on our website there to thank them for keeping me on the road and continuing to give me all the tools that I need to be on a podcast, because StreamYard is charging $630 a year, but there's a 50% coupon on this week, guys, so I'm back on. So
very cool.
That's good. I would love to come back on. I love you guys. And so, same thing with me. Like, as soon as I'm back on StreamYard, I want you guys coming over on my neck of the woods, or maybe we can do like a double stream at the same time, doing it from your channel and my channel. Sure.
We got lots of options.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'd love to do that. That'd be fun. We could do something at the same time. That's awesome.
as long as I don't get you
Excellent.
canceled.
Yeah, we don't get
I'm
destreamed
not
or
too worried
whatever.
about that.
Yeah.
What's the best way for people to reach out to you?
I would say either through all my social media channels from Facebook, LinkedIn. Email is olwlandlords@gmail.com. I used to give out my phone number and then I had to start screening, so I won't tell you that, but just reach out to Rob and Quentin and they'll give you my phone number if you really want to talk to me.
Okay,
Awesome.
perfect. Thank you
And
so much. And
Rob,
Quentin.
how wait, Rob. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, well, just
Not
go
by
to
mail.
what's
Not
that? Not by
by
mail.
mail.
No, you can go to Robin Mr. You can email me, robinmrbreakthrough.ca. You can go to Point Break Homes on Facebook too. And
Awesome.
Quentin, how can people get in touch with you?
You can go to quintindesouza.com, book a 15-minute call. As long as I'm not traveling somewhere, you can we can talk. I love talking real estate. So if there's something that you need some help with, I'm willing to give you 15 minutes and put you in the right direction. Or you can come out to Durham REI, and I speak once a month there. So I arrange my travel just so I can be back for the meetings. So make sure
Very
that
cool.
you check out Durham REI.
Next one's September, right?
Yes, we've been doing some fun networking events. We dressed in all white and had like a outdoor party, which was great. And then somebody's
I gotta come to that
just to have fun, right? Like go out and network. But yeah, September is the next one.
Very cool. All
It's
right,
building the
everybody.
community for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I saw some of the photos. It looked like a fun time.
It was.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.